You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina.
Well, hello and welcome to this October episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina. Can you believe it's already October? It's unbelievable. It also happens to be World Mental Health Day, which is the day anyway that this episode is being released. And we will be talking a little bit about mental health matters in this episode. We've got a great mini feature coming up with the sports psychologist, Dr. Ali Wagner from the Human Powered Health Team. But before I go any further, I should introduce the real brains of this operation. Do you see what I did there? Denny Gray.
No, I don't see what you've done.
Brains, mental health.
Yes, thank you. Well, you're trying to pay me a compliment, I think.
Yeah, I have paid you a compliment. If anything, you should see Rebecca Charlton's face because she looks absolutely crestfallen that I didn't immediately come to her. Hello, Rebecca, as well.
Hello. I was not surprised that you used that segue to intro Denny and not me.
You guys must be relieved that I'm saying that, you know, you're the brains of the operation instead of me doing the old school, being the school teacher last time, wasn't I, in the September episode, trying to keep control of my unruly pupils. I get a sense that you're glad that is over.
We've graduated now, haven't we, Rose?
Yes, you have.
That's right. We've got our jobs in industry. We've passed with flying colours. You know, you're just that teacher.
We know the difference between a protractor and a compass.
Yeah, well, do we? I don't think you do. Convinced. Well, now you guys have left school, obviously. Is that now, it's that awkward time where you've suddenly seen your teacher in the pub or something like that, isn't it? That kind of awkward interaction, or on the bus, and then you don't know whether to call them miss or sir, or just, you know, lob things at them, or not that I'm saying you should do that. You definitely shouldn't do that. Anyway, we should move on. I'm losing control of this already. Me and Rebecca, of course, we have spoken on the podcast since, haven't we? Our last episode, Becca, because we did the Arrive for the World Championships, where Magdalena Valieras was crowned. But Denny, we didn't get to hear your views on it. I did wonder, because it was such a big surprise winner, wasn't she? And I do hope that we're going to find out a little bit more about her in future episodes. But I was intrigued to know what you thought, Denny, of that World Championships.
I enjoyed it. It wasn't an absolute classic, but if we were marking out five in cheese wheels,
which we should, is only right, should, on the Cycling Podcast Femina,
then I think I'd give it a 3.5. It was a brutal circuit, very, very selective, of course. You know, as you've highlighted in the Arrive, and everyone saw really the favourite stalled, and we had a surprise winner, and which I really, really enjoyed. And what I think I really took away from the race was not that she was a lucky winner, a chancer that just happened to win on the day. I think, you know, even the way she raced, she took her opportunities. Her timing was brilliant. She made that kind of clean late kill on the final climb. But also it was apparent that she had prepared really, really well for the race in her post-race interviews. You know, this was a race which she'd targeted. She'd gone to altitude for. She trained for. She was 14th last year in the world at Zurich. You know, I know she hasn't had a big win up until now, but she's clearly an excellent climber, and it was quite unique conditions that they had to deal with, wasn't it? It was late in the season, at altitude, loads of climbing, and it was a course that rewards audacity, and she was audacious. She took the risks when others didn't. So I think she's a fully, fully deserving winner, and so I've really enjoyed that, and she's put in some strong performances since then in the Italian races, finishing in the top 10. So she's not a completely lucky winner, and I hope that she goes on to take, well, I know she will take a lot of confidence from this, but I hope she goes on to another level in 2026 as a result of this win.
Yeah, well, I was wondering, Becca, how do you see it? Because I'm a little bit, I don't want to say I'm against a surprise winner, because that makes it sound like I like the most boring results possible. Because I'm also against, you know, Anna van der Breggen winning you know, back in the day when she used to win absolutely everything all the time. I was also against that. Makes me sound like I just hate cycling, doesn't it? I'm really in the wrong career.
That's the answer.
But whatever I get, I want the other thing, basically, is what we've worked out. No, but I'm not, I might say 2.5 cheese wheels sounds very low, doesn't it? Maybe 3 cheese wheels. I just, you know, I'm not at all, of course, I'm not saying she's not a deserving winner. She's a full, if you win on the day, you're a deserving winner, aren't you? If you outwit everyone, if you, you know, commit yourself like all of the bike riders in the peloton do to, you know, doing a hard yards, training, diet, all of it, miserable, you know, weather conditions, attritional racing, then of course you're a deserving winner. But I guess that I just have this different feeling with championships. I think it's because you get to wear the jersey for the year. So I want someone who is going to be showing off that, who's going to be crossing the line, arms aloft, wearing that jersey all year long. That, I think that's the difference. I think that's the difference. Like, where something like Liège-Bastogne-Liège, or even Paris-Roubaix, you know, when Alison Jackson won that, like, phenomenal, great, you know, beating the odds, that is what we love about cycling. But it's almost like I'm probably unfairly have a different sense of it when it's the world champs. Rebecca, how many cheese wheels on reflection are you giving the world champs?
So this is out of 5, and you and Denny have gone for 3 and 3.5.
I think I kind of wanted to say 2.5.
But I think that seems
a bit rude. Yeah, which is totally, it's not really the kind of objective, you know, thing that we want with cheese wheels, is it? I don't know. I think it's just that it was like very difficult, very hard. And I think when you don't get to see all the favourites going at each other, then I think that immediately sort of downgrades it in terms of cheese.
I'm probably going to go somewhere similar to Denny. Then I'll go with a 3.5 as well, because I do as always like to sit on the fence in between both of your opinions. But I do know what you're getting at, Rose. You know, I don't think anyone can get away from the fact or deny the fact that we all were really excited to see the favourites go head to head for it, and that didn't happen. So I don't think anyone would have watched that race and thought, huh, that was not what I expected. Of course, that narrative kind of completely went out the window when all the big hitters were looking at each other. So I totally see your point, and I think it will be really interesting to see what Valieres does next for the following season in 2026, because having, as you say, the world championship bands on your jersey, you have that all year. It's utterly, utterly huge. And you can't have the world champion in your team, presumably, can you? And just say, right, she's back to domestic duties. It's got to change. It's got to change the game and the dynamic, surely. So it'll be really interesting to see what does happen next season, because it isn't something we often see, that a super domestic gets that opportunity, manages to seal the deal. And I think, as I said in the Arrive episode straight off the bat, what really probably surprised me actually about her post-race interview was I expected her to say, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I'm so shocked. I'm so surprised. But as you say, Danny, she didn't, did she? She went, I've prepared for this and I knew what I had and I delivered it. And I think that was a really interesting point, that she did know exactly what she was capable of. But it goes back to the point that you might have put all of the prep in, but so is everybody else. And she did play it perfectly. And I still thought that Mavi Garcia and Niamh Fisher-Black were potentially going to come back at her. I thought they were going to join forces, maybe come back. But she was just dominant. So it's no surprise that she knew she had that. But it was interesting in that respect, wasn't it? That it wasn't just like someone crashed and something went wrong and you're like, oh, well, you know, well done. She was just really, really dominant.
I mean, what I was even more surprised, because I glanced at my phone, like I wasn't actually watching live, which is probably a terrible thing to admit, because I was actually watching actually flown back from Croatia, gone straight to Crystal Palace, Liverpool football match. And I glanced at my phone and I saw an email that started Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, and I just presumed that Pauline Ferrand-Prévot had won it. So it was even more triply surprising. Sorry, I cut you off, Denny. What were you about to say?
No, I was just going to follow on from Becca, really, because the other thing that struck me about her win was the fact that it came out afterwards that she had to pay her own way to get to the Worlds. You know, she paid for her flight, she paid some of her fees. Cycling Canada couldn't fund her trip there. And so this was a rider that's kind of come a long way to get to the world's win. She progressed through the UCI World Cycling Centre, then onto EF Education Oatley. She had to prep super hard for this race. She targeted it specifically. She literally paid her own way to get to Rwanda and win that race. And when you put it in that kind of context, when she's up against Damie Vollering, who's now, you know, paid hundreds of thousands, if not millions of pounds to ride her bicycle with all the support that she gets, then I think the achievement is even greater. And that's why I think there is a possibility that she could go on to, you know, a better season next year. We shouldn't underestimate her, just like perhaps some people have underestimated her this time around when it comes to next season. I mean, Rose, of course, we are talking to David Lepartion, and we are going to try and campaign to make sure that only riders that you'd like to see winning can take to the start line in future Worlds Championships.
We'd like that, just like sort of a select 10 or something. They can't be either too good.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, they can't be people that have won too much. Well, that will anger you as well, Rose. You'll be moaning about them being too dominant. Oh, boring. Let's get another winner.
No, I do. It is interesting, actually, because when I was thinking about, you know, having that sort of slight feeling before, I remember when Mads Pedersen won the World Championships in Yorkshire and having this sense of like, oh, really? Like, oh, you know, I can't even remember who it should have been. Probably Julian Alaphilippe is probably who I was rooting for then. But, you know, oh really, Mads Pedersen? OK. Yeah, but obviously he has gone on to become, you know, one of the very best in the world. So, you know, we don't, but obviously that world championship for him came slightly earlier in his career. So, yeah, it will be really interesting to see where Magdalena Valieras comes from. It was interesting, wasn't it, watching the European road race, which we've had since. A little bit of retribution, again, not that Magdalena Valieras was there, of course, because she's Canadian, but a little bit of retribution for the Dutch team there winning with Demi Vollering, and Demi Vollering taking her first ever championship title at international level, which just seems bizarre, doesn't it, Rebecca, that, you know, Vollering feels like she's so, sometimes she feels like she can be so untouchable, and yet this, I thought we saw it, didn't we, when she came across the line. It felt a little bit like a monkey off her back for having taken this title, the European Championship title.
It did, and it also felt kind of like the scene we've expected. We expected that pure dominance, to see her as a lone rider, leader, crossing the line, done deal. And we kind of didn't have that in some situations where we expected it. And then that just felt like, yeah, that's kind of what we've expected in other scenarios. And yeah, I think it's one of those facts that we've probably all checked from time to time that we're right on, because when you say, right, she hasn't won the World Championships, she hasn't had the European Championships jersey, you kind of have to check yourself, because you think, well, she's won so big, she's been so dominant, she's been, as you say, Rose, so untouchable. Has she really not taken one of those accolades? So yeah, I think it was a really significant and important victory for her. And as I say, the way she did it out front, nobody getting her back, that's kind of what we had come to expect from Demi Vollering. But of course, this season hasn't gone all her way. So at this point in the year, especially to have finished that off, I think that'll be mightily important for her.
Yeah, I think we saw all of that kind of, I mean, she is an emotional rider and she does, you know, ride with her heart on her sleeve. But I just got a sense when she kind of let out that scream almost when she came across the line that it was, yeah, getting something back for having had a, well, having had a hard season, but then a really successful season. It's so difficult if you're a rider like Demi Vollering. And, you know, Vollering has spoken about kind of the mental pressure that comes with being such an incredible bike rider, but also, you know, with being a team leader, with that expectation that she will kind of succeed all the time. She has spoken about what kind of mental pressure that can be. And I think that's kind of even more so when you're at a championship and you're heading up a team like the Dutch team, which always is always top of our list, isn't it, of like who's got the strongest team. It's always the Dutch team, and then it's also France or Italy. But, you know, they always have all the superstars. And so when she's got that pressure of, like, okay, you're the leader amongst all of these superstars, and then for so many years she hasn't, that hasn't translated into actually taking the jersey, like, you know, hasn't meant the European jersey or the rainbow stripes. That, yeah, that's huge for her actually to come and, yeah, take that, Denny, wasn't it?
It was a big win. And also it came off the back of, I guess, a disappointing 6 months, or maybe not 6 months, 4 months or so for Demi Vollering, because although she won a lot this year, her last win was actually at the back of, or beginning of June. And then she had the disappointment of the Tour de France Femme, where she was the favourite going into that race, wanted to kind of avenge her very narrow defeat to Cassia Nieuwiedoma in 2024, but came across Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, who was just unstoppable. Then she had the disappointment of the Worlds, where all of the favourites were kind of outmaneuvered by Magdalena Valiera. So, you know, with that background, I think this win was particularly big for her. It was a strong field as well. I mean, you know, pretty much a who's who of kind of the specialists on hilly terrain. So it was a big win for her, a big moment. She'd actually said something that the Dutch press picked up. I think she said it to Het Nieuwsblad after the race, that during the Worlds, her menstruation cycle had affected her ride there. So that, you know, physiologically, there must have been disappointment as well that she wasn't where she'd hoped to be at the Worlds as either. And so to finally get a championship jersey at the end of the season must have been a big, big moment for her. And another big moment for the Dutch as well, because I think there's been 10 editions of the Euros and they've won 9. Marta Bastianelli is the only rider, non-Dutch rider, to have won that. So yeah, the Dutch continue their reign in the Euro bands.
This is why you're the brains of the operation here, Denny, stats like that.
Well, it doesn't take that much to have a quick look at a famous cycling stats site to check that. But yeah,
I think that's put us down even more, hasn't it, to say that it doesn't really even take much to have the brains that you have.
Thanks, Denny. I didn't mean like that. I just mean like, yeah, I didn't even have to get the Cassia Nieuwiedoma out to calculate that. I just looked at some web page. But yeah,
we haven't had the Cassia Nieuwiedoma out nearly enough this year, it feels, does it? I have to say, it is almost a little bit. I thought the European Championships kind of continued a little bit of a trend that we've seen in recent months, where it seems to be kind of almost like one move will win it. You know, we sort of saw that, didn't we, all through the Tour de France fam, that it was like each stage was one, you know, Maeve Squibban or whatever would make one attack and then she would win the stage. But it was kind of like that again at the European Champs, wasn't it? We saw that basically Demi Vollering made one move with about 37 kilometres to go and then was off, and then everyone was time trialling again. And it's so intriguing, isn't it? Because we really thought this year that it would be extremely closely fought because of this sort of merry-go-round of transfers that we had last year, where all the talent kind of got spread what seemed very evenly across all of the teams. And it has been even, actually, because we haven't had a dominant winner winning over and over again. But it's intriguing that we haven't
Lorena
also...
Vibus.
Apart from Lorena Vibus, yeah. Yes, on any sprint stages, it's just almost like no point in turning up, is there? But yeah, we haven't really seen this year generally much of that, those kind of close rivalries of people trying to outwit each other. I'm very aware that actually before we started this podcast, I said, let's not veer too much to talking about that because that's probably what we'll talk about next month. But I have veered that way. I'm sorry,
you've opened
everyone.
That can of worms, Rose.
So yeah, but I mean, Becca, what's your stance on that?
On the spread of talent from the transfers? Yeah, I think it's really easy to kind of just look at the last couple of races that are fresh, isn't it? But actually, I think I really do stand by the fact that I think this has been the most animated season we've ever had in women's cycling. I've said it a few times, but I do believe that. And I do believe that is because of those transfers that were utterly huge. And we anticipated at the start of the year how much they would affect the racing. And ultimately, I really think they did. I think we saw battles that we did not expect to be that close, namely the likes of Vollering going up against Marlen Reusser. I think it was massively affected, obviously, at that point, at that big, big pinnacle point of the season. We had the Grand Tours close together and we saw people out with illness. You know, Reusser getting sick and Longaborghini getting sick. And you're kind of like, oh, that's the point where we really wanted to ramp up to it being that close battle. So I do think that we had some caveats there when riders were just out with illness or injury. And so we didn't kind of always get every single person, every hitter going up against each other at every race. So we definitely didn't have that. I also think the fact that the season and the peloton is changing and evolving all the time. So people are having breaks, people are missing races, skipping them and then coming back in for different targets. So also a bit of a tangent, but another element to that is the fact that some of these riders, some of these big names did decide to field or try to field everything. And then they were, you know, potentially the ones out with sickness. So I think going forward, we'll see maybe teams making different decisions based on that.
Yeah, I think we've definitely seen the talent more spread across the teams. And when you look back at the big races, it's clear that there's been no dominant team or dominant rider. I think for a while we thought FDJ Suez were going to be the dominant team when it came to stage races after Damien Vollering's brilliant start to the season in Spain when the stage racing started. But then Pauline Ferrand-Prevot and Elisa Longaborghini kind of turned that idea on its head when it came to the Giro and the Tour. And even in the classics, I think, you know, we've seen the winners fairly evenly spread, and Pauline Ferrand-Prevot winning Paris-Roubaix was a massive surprise. I do agree with your point, Rose, though, that I think what we haven't seen, which has perhaps been a surprise given the fact that we have seen this spread of talent, and perhaps, you know, SD Works, not, we haven't had the dominance of SD Works basically, which we've been used to for the last couple of years, is we haven't seen a lot of jeopardy in a lot of the big races. You know, the races haven't gone down to the wire. They have often been decided by moves that have happened several kilometers from the finish, if not more. And I think that has been a disappointment from a kind of spectacle point of view. Even the Tour de France, you know, I mean, that's a classic example, isn't it? Last year, it came down to seconds, the closest or the smallest winning margin of a Tour de France ever, when Cassiani Viadoma won. This year, we kind of knew it was in the bag for Pauline Ferrand-Prevot on that second to last stage after she put in that dig on the final climb. So we haven't seen that back and forth, that jeopardy, will she, won't she, enough, I don't think, this season. And hopefully we'll get more of that this year. I think we did ponder earlier on in the season that perhaps the new team dynamics were playing into that, because nobody quite knew who should be taking responsibility for chasing initially. But that seemed to continue throughout the year, you know, when the pecking order had been sorted to some extent. So, yeah, maybe it's just one of those things where some seasons that happens and other seasons it don't. It doesn't, sorry.
Can I just dive in? I know I'm going way back in the topics here. in the line of the show. But Denny, I don't feel like we've really had your take on those favourites looking at each other in the World Championships and doing that thing of, well, you're not going, so I'm not going to go, and I'm going to hold back and I'm going to wait. And they were still looking at each other when it was absolutely done and gone. What were you thinking through that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't... What was I thinking? Yeah, I was thinking it was madness, but I think like we all were when watching the TV. But it was one of those cases where there weren't huge amounts of domestiques left. And I think you've either just, you know, no rider was willing just to risk things. I think that's what Demi Vollering decided she'd learned from the world at the Euros, because she decided, actually, you know what, I'm going to attack 37 kilometers out, and it might not pay off because that's a long way out to go, but I need to take the risk, because last week I learned that if I don't take those risks, then somebody else who's already been audacious, like Magdalena Valieris, will take the opportunity. So, you know, hopefully that will be a lesson that some of those riders take into next year, and we do see more risk taking.
But it is kind of crazy, isn't it? Because we started the year saying that at Omloop, Het Nieuwsblad,
Lotte Klaas
won. We were like, oh, well, you know, at least everyone will learn a lesson here that you can't just, you know, be the best in the world and all be looking at each other and not, you know, bring someone back. So it's kind of mad to, it's almost like the season has been, in terms of major races, it's almost been bookended, hasn't it? By these two examples of all the leaders looking at each other and stalling a bit, and then someone else, you know, taking a surprise win. So as much as it's like, oh, I think they'll learn from this, it's also like, but will they? I don't know. I don't know that they will.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, this debate's been going on since cycling began almost. I feel like every couple of months we have this discussion about, you know, what else could they or should they have done? And it will continue because cycling is so complicated, isn't it? As these riders are riding flat out, they've got to make multiple decisions in their heads, try and work out the tactics, try and work out, well, if how many times can I make this effort before I burn out and then I destroy my own chances? Do I want to take somebody else to the line? This will go on forever. This is exactly what happened in Paris-Roubaix when Pauline Ferrand-Prevot won. But, you know, there was a big group behind her. In theory, they should have been able to catch her, but they couldn't work together. And I'm sure we'll continue to see it. But it was nice to see Vollering taking some risks at the Euros. And, you know, maybe for one or two riders, we'll see a different way of riding next year as a result.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast Team Car at the back of the pack, please.
Yeah, it's so interesting that we're talking about this kind of, you know, having the confidence to go for something even when it might fail, because actually this really fits in very nicely as a perfect segue, in fact, to our mini feature this month, which I recorded back at the Tour de France FAM. Me and Denny actually on the first stage, wasn't it, Denny? We were kind of parked the car at the press room and then walked along to the finish of the stage. And for some reason, I walked immediately back again. You stayed on at the finish line, but I almost immediately, as soon as I'd almost dropped you off out of my Chelsea tractor at the gates of the school, at the school gates, I immediately went back towards the press room, or I guess towards the buses to get some interviews there. And as I was walking, I was met by Dr. Ali Wagner, or introduced to Dr. Ali Wagner, who's the sports psychologist at the Human Powered Health Team. And it was so interesting talking to her, getting some insights from her about cycling, about the fact that, you know, that women's cycling has sports psychologists, which is something that I think even men's cycling was a bit slow to come to be honest, compared with other major professional sports. But obviously the women's scene is now Bringing on more sports psychologists, but Human Powered Health was certainly one of the pioneers of that, having had Dr. Ali Wagner around for the last few years. So had a really interesting conversation with her, and then thought it would be great if we could all get the benefit of hearing from her on the podcast. So, yeah, I interviewed her on the bus between the start and finish of one of the stages, which explains, yeah, I did record all of this podcast out at the race. So that just to give the little caveat that you will be hearing all sorts of those kind of usual bike sounds, honking horns, buses humming, generators whirring. Well, let's get into it, shall we? And we're first going to hear from Rhoda Jonkerer, the general manager at Human Powered Health.
But honestly, when we were starting with it 2 years ago, I think we were one of the first teams, but I think it's becoming more and more popular. And I'm very happy to see that there's absolutely no taboo anymore around it. I think a few years ago, when you were talking about a sports psychologist or a mental coach, a lot of people had the impression that, you know, you only need somebody like that if you actually have an issue. Everybody can sometimes use some time that they can spend with somebody just talking about general stuff that is on their mind.
For a sport obsessed with marginal gains, cycling's adoption of sports psychology, particularly in the less well-funded world of women's cycling, has been relatively slow. 2 years ago, Human Powered Health were one of the first women's teams to invest in sports psychology, bringing Dr. Ali Wagner, who works internationally across sports as diverse as NBA basketball and Irish dancing, on board. And the team continued to pioneer, seeing the importance of having Ali not only on their books, but also present with the team during some of the year's biggest targets, like the Spring Classics, and where I met up with her for this interview at the Tour de France Femmes, all in an effort to help their athletes achieve whatever their goal might be. Here's Ali.
I just want to be better, right? Or I have these really big goals. How do I get there? I'm working really hard physically. My nutrition's on point, right? You have those kind of buckets you're taking care of, but oftentimes the mindset piece is missed for a lot of reasons. And I really hope that, you know, my role here is helping create, maybe breaking down that stigma that, like, getting support, whether it's for depression or performance enhancement, right? That it's health, it's wellness, right? Just as we take care of our bodies. Everybody is training really hard. Everybody's putting in the hours. But if we're not working on the mental side, you may never know what that extra percentage you can give. And learning to cope with pain, right? I always tease with the team, right? Okay, we're talking about, oh, how long can I suffer? I'm like, let's shift that perspective to talk more about, do we have to say suffering? I mean, right there, that perspective sounds pretty miserable, yeah. Right? And so those little tweaks and changes, I think, do start to separate the elite from the great, right? And so again, what's our goal? Do you want to just get here and survive within it? I mean, that's, and again, that is a feat in and of itself. However, could we even take it to another level, right? Because there are some differences that separate, and I would argue mindset is a pretty important one.
It is not all about improving performance. In fact, there is a whole spectrum to sports psychology, from upping performance on one end to simply striving for good mental health on and off the bike at the other. In practical terms, at the Tour de France Femmes, that means checking in with the riders after every stage and being an ever-available ear to listen.
A lot of the riders are working really hard for someone else, and there's a chance it may not work out, so there has to be something more. Life can be really challenging, and while we're focusing on cycling, I think looking at the person as a person that has a family, that has friendships, that has hormones going through their bodies, right? There's a lot of things that can come up for us that I think we all could have a trusted person to bounce ideas off of. And when things get hard, we have that person to support us at a deeper level.
This support extends further than just the riders. Ali also takes care of the staff of the Human Powered Health team too. General Manager Rhoda Jonkerer not only personally attests to the benefits of this team resource, but has even noticed something of a change in the general culture of the team that she attributes to Ali.
We really notice a difference when she's around. and in general, you know, that I think we can safely say that sometimes that can help to avoid explosions. Like if you are able to tackle with something that might be giving some friction or that might, you know, cause some irritations in the team, and you're able to nip it in the bud, then, you know, to deal with it before it becomes a big thing, I think that's super helpful. Also for the riders, you know, sometimes things happen along the season, and, you know, we need to do some shifts. Sometimes that in itself can be pretty stressful. Like, just to give you a little example, we have had a pretty rough season already in terms of injuries and illnesses. Actually, in 1 week, in March, we had like 3 of our leaders crash out, which created the situation that some girls that were not used to be a leader had to step up because our leaders were gone. So that's something that, you know, causes some pressure, of course, and it is something that for them might suddenly be a new situation, something that they're not used to. And then it's not only about their own performance, but also like, how do I become a leader in this team? Like, and I think Ali was super helpful there as well, with some of the girls to support them in taking on that leadership.
Integral to the success of sports psychology, though, is the ability of the team to thrive without Ali being there, arming the athletes with tools that they can use themselves to help build their mental resilience. One such practice is visualization.
It's preparation. It's preparing for that event, for that race, for that big game, and visualizing it, right? What that's going to feel like, look like, and I want you to feel confident, but how do you act confident? How do you engage in those behaviors, those routines that will ultimately give you the best chance for success? I want my athletes to see themselves being able to recover when the adversity does hit. So it's not just all sunshine and rainbows, like, oh, I'm going to win the race, right? It's like, okay, well, what are you going to do when your legs get really tired, right? What are you going to do when the rain is pelting on and you have a big hill, a downhill coming up? Let's visualize, let's talk through what that's, let's get your body and your mind used to what that's going to feel like. So when it comes, you're like, I've already done this 500 times.
Weather, terrain, fellow riders, illness and injury. There are few sports that are as much of a lottery as cycling. Putting to the test that core pillar of sports psychology, how to contend with the uncontrollable.
There are going to be things that show up that aren't in your control. The moment you can let go of that, the better you're going to do. Because that's what, you know, when we stress about the weather and what's going to happen, and, you know, that ruins your day. And there is not a dang thing you can do about the weather besides maybe adjust your clothing to it, right? But that's a mindset shift of how you're perceiving it and saying, okay, if there is a puncture in my tire or there's a crash and it now took me out of winning, that's incredibly disappointing. And yet I still move forward. I want my athletes to feel confident. But what I want more than anything is when they don't feel confident, can they still execute the game plan, right? It's, to me, that's courage, that's bravery. It's not when people say, oh, go be fearless. I'm like, well, it's kind of dumb, right? Like, you can do anything if you're fearless. However, to me, being courageous is having the fear and doing it anyways. And I think the more times we're willing to go in that space of uncertainty, I think to me, that's where we grow and that's where we're truly gonna have success.
One of the biggest successes for the team this year came on stage 7 of the Tour de France Femmes, where a daring attack saw Ruth Edwards finish third, supported in the follow car by Ali herself.
It's not common, I suppose, to have a sports psychologist in a follow car with you, and it was a really nice surprise to have Ali coincidentally in the follow car that day when I was in the breakaway for the Tour. And I was feeling in general really good, and I work with a sports psychologist and life coach in my everyday life, I suppose, or it's part of my life. I was going to say performance process, but in general, I think that psychology, working with a psychologist, has helped me a lot in just like in my life. So yeah, it was a really nice surprise to have her. I was already feeling quite good, and just having that reminder from the car to just breathe, relax. I've done the training. It wasn't pushy. It wasn't the normal kind of like, you've got this, you can do it. Yeah, like keep suffering sort of encouragement that I would say we usually get, which I'm not, that's not to shit on that side either. I think that that encouragement can also be really good. It's just quite different from a director's encouragement from a sports psych who was just really calm and really giving me confidence that I knew what to do and that I just had to keep trusting myself to do it. And I've done the work. I'm in the moment now. That was just really cool. Super helpful. I joked with Ali after the race that she, you know, helped get that podium, which isn't really a joke. I really think that it was really helped me stay calm. And again, I don't think it was just her in that moment. I think the work that I've done over the years helped me for that moment and helped me know what to do with the words she was giving me. But still, like, just having that literal reminder in your ear, in my ear at the time, was really, really helpful.
We might be talking about success on cycling's biggest stage, but Ali is keen to make clear that sports psychology's application is something that everyone, athlete or not, is able to benefit from.
The great thing is our brains are malleable, so we can learn no matter what our age is or no matter how deep that pattern is, but we can always continue learning. It just starts with a willingness.
Well, so interesting hearing from Dr. Ali Wagner. And actually, I do remember that some listeners will have already heard from her already, because we actually heard from her during the Tour de France fam. And this seems like such distant memory now. But we had that stage on stage three when Demi Vollering crashed towards the end of the stage. She didn't lose time technically because of, you know, it being within 5 kilometres, was it, from the finish on that stage. But yeah, she seemed battered and bruised, and it was kind of like history repeating itself from, you know, Yellow Gate or whatever, from the year previously, where she went down and was kind of left a little bit floundering from her teammates. And we spoke to Dr. Ali Wagner, didn't we, about history repeating and how does an athlete get past that? How do they move on from that? How do they come to the same circumstance and not just expect the worst to happen? So we heard from her then, but, you know, obviously it didn't matter in the end, actually, so much, because we did see such a, well, maybe it did matter, but we did see such a stellar performance from Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, didn't we, in the end, which kind of blew that story away somewhat. But it's been really interesting year, hasn't it, in terms of sports psychology and in terms more broadly of mental health, Rebecca, because we've had so many riders come out and talk about in a really open and honest way about struggling with pressure or struggling with, you know, online comments. I mean, it's been kind of feels a little bit like a taboo has been broken.
Yeah, I think that. Saying earlier that this is, you know, been a really different season, I think one of the reasons for that is riders are being more candid and they're being open. They're using their social media to answer critics and say, well, actually, this is what's been going on behind closed doors. This is why I perhaps didn't really deserve the criticism that was levelled at me today. And I think that the peloton is becoming more vocal and more open. And yeah, that's one of the positive sides, I think, that we've seen from social media is that right to reply from riders. And I was thinking about the fact, actually, that many, many years ago now, when Victoria Pendleton was at the peak of her, of course, track cycling career, and she was just multiple world champions, she was just winning in dominant form absolutely everything, and she went to, I don't know, maybe a World Cup, and she just wasn't where everybody expected her to be. And I remember her doing a live interview on the BBC and sort of saying, well, there's a reason I wasn't really on form today. I mean, you know what I'm getting at. But she didn't feel she could even say, listen, I was on my period, which, you know, it came to light later. That's obviously what she was alluding to. She'd had terrible cramps. I think she perhaps, you know, expanded and opened up more post-retirement and said, you know, I was struggling with all these different things, but she didn't feel like she could say it. The audience kind of like, well, what, you know, what's she getting at here? Because people didn't talk about it. They didn't talk about menstrual cycles. They didn't talk about the psychological impact of coming in and feeling like you had to hide where you were at or where you'd come from in training, coming into a big target. And now riders are talking about that. And of course, psychology is absolutely huge. So it was so interesting to get that insight. And another thing I was thinking about on the back of that interview as well was conversations I've had this year with Fifa Georgie about repeatedly coming back into a bunch sprint and how on earth you get your head back into that space to be the most competitive lead out or sprinter, for example, in the world, when you know that you have crashed very, very badly in that exact situation before. And I think also Elisa Balsamo, the number of times she's come back after being, you know, sent into a barrier, it doesn't cease to amaze me. So I'm so pleased that these riders are getting the psychological support that they need. And that might not even be coming back from a crash for some riders, as we've heard. It could be just preparing yourself to be in the best place you can be. It doesn't always have to come from a place of adversity.
Yeah, I think that's what's so interesting talking to Ali was that it really is a spectrum. There is that kind of, where can I gain on performance? You know, where can my mentality give me the edge so that I achieve better results? And there is that other end of the spectrum, which is just basically maintaining a good mental health, being, you know, having someone to speak to who is kind of a neutral ground, someone that you can kind of vent to, that means that you can kind of get something off your chest and move on and take on the next day. And that's whether that's on the bike or off the bike, quite crucially. But it has been so refreshing to have this honesty from a lot of riders. And we do have to give a huge amount of kind of credit, I think, to Demi Vollering, really, because I think she has always been very open and honest and, you know, admitted that she was struggling at the Tour de France 2 years ago and had a really emotional interview, didn't she, during the Vuelta in May this year, talking about knowing people who struggle and that her mentality means that she can win beautiful bike races, and for other people it means that they're struggling and they can't see a way through. And she kind of dedicated her victory to people who are struggling with their mental health. So it's so interesting that we are having these conversations, being open about these conversations. And like you say, Rebecca, obviously social media is a great platform for that. But then there is another side to it, isn't there? I just heard recently Sarah Gigante, who's had a phenomenal tour, but there was a lot of talk on that last day. She was in a podium position. There's a lot of talk on that last day that she wasn't as good a descender as the other riders, and that she had the potential to ship a load of time on that final day and then end up off the podium. And that is exactly what happened. And she has since said on the Domestique podcast, she said that, you know, she knows you can always go looking for online hate if you want to do it. But, you know, she was being sent messages saying, you know, how that her descending is appalling, and, you know, actually being sent it, being direct messaged these kind of messages. So as much social media has allowed us to have these open conversations, it's also opening that channel for riders to read things that are really just, you know, not going to put them in a
There's so much
place.
The balance now, isn't there, being a professional rider, or any level, actually. I mean, you know, Becca talking about, you know, the psychology of coming back from crashes and things, you know, when I do interviews with riders at the British Continental, you know, even kind of lower levels, it's still a bigger issue, and they don't have half the support that perhaps some of the professionals do. But yeah, I mean, I really do feel for Sarah Gigante, And it's great that she can be open about that, and the fact that, you know, she's had this abuse, which no one deserves, of course. Pointed out most of the abuse comes from men, unfortunately, who send the messages. And it really shouldn't be something that we should accept or see in any sport or any domain. So I really feel for her. But she, the good thing from what she was saying was that she's trying to focus on what she can control, which is something the psychologist would support. You know, she's going to focus on her descending, and she's leaning on the support of her team. She's taken the long view, and she's shown through coming back from surgery and other challenges she's faced that she can come back from adversity. And I'm sure, hopefully she'll bounce back next year. But I also agree with the point that we've certainly seen a much more open peloton. The weight debate was mostly quite mature, actually, after the comments we had post Tour de France, when Pauline Ferrand-Prevot talked about losing weight, and then Demi Vollering said she's not going to change her weight. And there was quite a lot of reflective comments from riders across the peloton on social media, which I think were quite useful, actually, in advancing the debate. And hopefully we can see more of that kind of mature, nuanced discussion on social media and beyond.
Now, unfortunately, we have run out of time to do a huge stacked preview of the Chinese races, which conclude the World Tour season. I know you've got a whole book of notes.
I'm very
there,
disappointed. I mean, the Tour of Chongming Island is going to look like, it's looking like the best edition ever. As for the Tour of Guangxi,
to be fair to Chongming, it's been around an awfully long time. So we do, of course, support that. Maybe not the highway stage that they do, where they just go back up and down a highway. we'll see. Next time we meet, we will of course see what will have happened there. And well, I did also kind of ruin what we were going to do next month, which was kind of examine how did this kind of carousel of transfers, which we haven't had this year, it should be said. You know, probably the most major news is Paulina Royacker's moving over to UAE. But apart from that, we haven't, you know, it's not like last year where we filled several episodes, didn't we, talking about transfers and who was going where and what the rumours were. But yes, we will be in a reflective mood, I think, probably next month, looking back over the season, trying to work out who the winners and losers were. But thank you very much for joining me. Rebecca, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Denny, thank you very
much. Thank you. I've got a pizza in the oven, which I need to take out. So I must.
I'm worried.
That's not a metaphor. That's not. Yeah.
I'm worried it's burnt because Denny, I think we've been talking. We've talked for about five, probably about a third. That pizza's been in the third longer than it should have done.
Oh no. Yeah. On that note.
Okay.
You better go,
right,
Denny.
Well,
I kept the tape rolling.
Thank you very much for doing that. And thank you very much, listeners.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.